Welcome to another edition of Inside the Rebels. I'm Joe Arrigo. Along with me, as always, is my partner in crime, because we do crime sprees like that. He's wearing the red beanie today. JVT, John Von Tobel. And introducing to everybody right now is our head basketball writer from Inside the Rebels. He covers the Rebels basketball, so don't tweet me why am I not covering the Rebels basketball Rebel user that's been banned by everybody except me. Jeff Wadilove, what's going on, man?
Hey, guys, how you doing? Coming off that tough loss, getting ran out of T-Mobile by Duke.
Yeah, that sucks. JVT, what's popping with you, bro?
Nothing, man. I actually just chilling. Actually, today's a really low-key day. I got some guests to book. Somewhat busy. You measure my beanie.
Yeah.
I had a blue one on yesterday. I've been rocking the beanies lately. So I don't know how I feel about them yet.
So you went from crypt to blood.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm trying out the beanie.
Yeah.
Because I have a big head, so I'm trying out the beanie to see, you know, if it works. Because, you know, I'm a fan of the fitted caps.
Yeah,
size
me too.
Eight.
Yep.
But I'm trying the beanies out. This is a little small, so look. I got to keep by pulling it down. But yeah, it's cool.
Though the beanies, I like the ones with the bill.
Now, I love those.
About 2004. You're trying to bring it back?
I'll bring it 2024.
Yeah, it was in my first year in college. I rocked that thing like every day, and I had my long hair, too. It came down to here. It was awesome.
You had long hair?
Oh, yeah. One of my biggest regrets is I got rid of my old license. I used to have the hair down to here. It was nice, curly. It was beautiful. Beautiful.
You're like flowing locks, man.
Flowing locks of head and shoulders.
Oh, so I'm trying to get there again, actually. I'm trying to grow it out, so
we'll see. I did the long hair thing, but I just looked like John Lennon, man. It wasn't a good look for me.
That's a good. Well, speaking of John Lennon, that's actually a good little transition. You didn't even try to do that.
Segue.
Back in the day, John Lennon was, I mean, he was the man. Like, he was the most popular Beatle, and it was one of those things where, you know, Lennon, it was hits, hit after hit after hit. Not like UNLV basketball under Tark, you know, winning the largest point differential in a finals history when they smashed Duke to win the national title.
103-73, baby.
And then turn around the following year and have arguably the greatest basketball game in the history of finals, and NCAA finals, regrettably losing to Duke. So they tried to remake history over the weekend, and history was made because Duke put their blue foot up the Rebels' ass at T-Mobile on Saturday.
Yeah, Grayson Allen, the dunk of the century, maybe, all over Dwayne Morgan. As Eddie Murphy said, in the face.
I don't know if it was dunk of the century, though.
It wasn't the dunk of the century.
No, it wasn't.
I think
was it Bring It Home, Jerome?
It could be Bring It Home, Jerome, but no. I think Vince Carter jumping over a 7-footer.
Oh yeah, in the Olympics.
That's got to be up there.
Yeah, wide open lane, and then just smashing over somebody.
That's a good dunk.
but looking at the game, I mean, I want to, the thing that stood out to me, and it goes a pregame. I think expectations, and I think, you know, the expectations. People actually thought that the Rebels were going to be in this game. Like, they thought it was going to be close, and the reality is this isn't Tark's Rebels. This isn't Larry Johnson, George Ackles, Greg Anthony, Anderson Hunt coming out of the tunnel. You know, these are a bunch of guys that are during the game played best when a walk-on point guard came on the court. True. So for anybody to think that this was going to be a close game, to me was asinine, and whatever drugs you're on, pass them my way.
This we're all disagreeing. I don't think people thought they were going to be in the game. I think people were shocked about how far away this team is from actually being a decent team at the end of the game. You see what I'm saying? So they came in thinking, look, Duke's going to win. They'll win by 15, 20 points. They'll win handily. But to see them just get utterly destroyed by about 50 points, I think it was shocking to some people because they were like, all right, look, we knew we were down. We didn't realize we were this down. This is insane. This is like Duke taking on Division II.
Listening to you, I don't think you thought, JVT, that they were going to be beat by 50, but kind of made mention that this program isn't where some people think they are.
No, of course not. And you look at the game against Arizona State. I mean, that's another Power 5 team. Granted, Arizona State shot the lights out. I know you know that as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you watch them play, you realize that this team's not really there. Like, when you're in a back-and-forth game with Southern Utah and you kind of have to pull away in the last 4 minutes, I mean, this program's not where you want it to be. And so now people are thinking, all right, look, program's down, recruits aren't as good, we only have 3 people returning, but we're hoping that we're at least going to put up a little bit of a fight, right? And that's what you're hoping. And then you come, Duke comes to town, first time in 25 years, everyone's excited, you're hearkening back to the old days, and you're thinking, look, it's going to be bad, but, you know, maybe they'll stick around for a little bit. In the last 10 minutes of the first half, maybe that's what people expected for a while. You know, them just to go back and forth for a little bit, be in the game for a while, and then as the game progresses, they'll pull away. It was done from the first tip.
I think we have to put it in perspective, though. You know, we do have a fan base that's far from pragmatic, I think. You know, Joe said it himself, these aren't Tarks Rebels, but we haven't been Tarks Rebels for a long time. I mean, we're a far cry even from Lon's Rebels. You know, Lon Kruger used to go out and, you know, let's face it, he owned November, December. We would go into Louisville, you know, we would compete. You know, even hearkening back to Dave Rice, I mean, last year, UNLV was able to beat not only the Pac-12 champion, Oregon, but they hung and beat with, you know, Indiana squad that ultimately won the Big Ten. So you got to look at the offseason. You know, it was definitely unprecedented to let Dave Rice go midseason. And from there, you know, it was the shit show that was the coaching search. So, you know, we heard names like Jamie Dixon. You know, we flirted publicly with Mick Cronin. You know, ultimately, it whittled down to what was probably a sixth choice in Marvin Menzies. You know, Chris Beard / Bird, as President Jessup would like to refer to him as, you know, took the job. And from there, it was a mass exodus. So we were left with Tyrell Green, who was injured the entire season prior. Jalen Poyser, who, you know, thankfully stuck around because he's now our leading scorer. And, you know, Dwayne Morgan, who, bless his heart, is the game might be a little quick for him.
Yeah, so, you said that. I think you, one of you guys, I think it was you, Jeff, that said it, that the, I think it was you reading one of your articles, you said that the game seems to be too fast for Morgan. It doesn't seem like the game is slowing down for him at this level.
And it's been that way since he's a freshman. And, you know, I like the kid's effort, but at the same time, you can tell that things are just a little bit out of control for him. He gets the ball in the post and his feet shuffle and he's traveling. I mean, you must have saw just like 3 or 4 travels by himself against Duke. You know,
he's not the only one that travels.
Oh, no.
Had about like 6 of them.
Uche's pretty bad at it. Jovan does it a lot, too. I mean, it's a team thing with the traveling.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. But again, so, I mean, you have to understand what the talent level is right now. So most recruiting classes, you know, are conceptualized by a recruiting staff, you know, sometimes 4 years, 5 years in advance. So, you know, the 2016 class, by the time Marvin had his shot at it, you know, kids were very much spoken for. So he was going and far reaching. So you're looking at levels such as Division II junior college to land a Jovan Mooring. You bring in Zion Morgan out of Chicago. His premier offer, so to speak, were University of Illinois, Chicago, and Toledo. So you have 10 guys who, for the most part, under different circumstances, aren't going to be playing at UNLV. And that's what people have to understand. The talent level went from a Patrick McCaw, who was a second-round pick, who's in the rotation in Golden State, you know, Steven Zimmerman, who, you know, Mr. Everything Las Vegas, you know, is killing it in his D-League stint, averaging like 20 and 10.
And he's a perfect example of a guy that should have stayed another year.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm just going to be honest. If he stays another year, he not only gets stronger physically, his game gets a little more refined. And you could see him being in the top half of the NBA draft. I'm not saying a lottery pick, but he's a top half of the NBA draft type of guy. And then he doesn't have to go down to the D-League. Presuming he doesn't have to go down to the D-League.
His plan the whole time, though, always was one and done, no matter what.
Every kid's plan is one and done. If they have their McDonald's All-American, they're rated in the top 20. That's their plan. But the reality
is
sometimes the plans have to change. I mean, the plan was to bring in a high-profile head coach to UNLV. Plans had to change when the reality set in. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, the guys that are there, I mean, Rice sold a culture of one and duns to UNLV players. Mm. UNLV is not on the same playing field or level right now of Kentucky, North Carolina, Louisville, hell, UCLA, Michigan even. They're not on that level right now.
Hey, right now we're not even on the same level as South Alabama.
Exactly. So you have to be realistic you have to set your realistic expectations when it comes to your recruits. When it says, and your fan base. You know, Menzies, and people are calling for Menzies' job.
Already, which is asinine.
Which is stupid. Yeah. I mean, look, this be real. This guy's, eight, 9 games into the year?
Yeah, 5-4.
You know, and you're calling for a guy's job. What did you expect to go, you know, 9-0, 8-1?
I don't think that is. Like I said, I think they knew that they were low. They just didn't realize they were this low. And that's what the issue is.
I agree with JVT there. I think people... I mean, they want to have expectations that are maybe lower, but seeing it and believing it are different things. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when you try, you know, a Duke team in. And let's face it, people are still raw about Duke. People in this fan base still hate Duke. I mean, you want to talk about San Diego State, you know, going back maybe BYU as being the teams that are most loathed by this fan base. Yeah. Duke is still number one. And to have them come in to Las Vegas, you know, and beat us like they did on our home turf, I mean, yeah, people are going to get upset by that. So that's why you're seeing these reactions. But again, I have to really tell people to really pump the brakes because, again, it's a talent level. The dichotomy couldn't have been more profound out there on the floor at T-Mobile Arena. You know, Duke is 11 guys that are McDonald's All-American level. I mean, their worst guy, I mean, on the bench might be Chase Jeter. And we all remember that he was ranked in most websites above Steven Zimmerman.
Yeah, by a slot, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just where we're at right now. So a lot of it is going to have to be, you know, growing pains. And a lot of people don't want to hear that in this era that we live in. You know, everything's on demand. Everything's instantaneous gratification. But it's going to be 2 years, maybe even 3 years.
Jeff's using big words again. Mm. Well, man, that's big. Those are big
words.
Get out
the thesaurus, y'all.
Real quick, I wanted to go back to something that you were talking about earlier, Jeff. Yes. And because I've heard this a couple times. Dwayne Morgan's kind of been turning into like the guy that everybody's been not bashing on, but they've been like, you know, we're gonna criticize him a lot.
The guy they love, they hate.
Yeah, exactly. It started to be Jovan Mooring for a little bit, but it's turned into Dwayne Morgan. And the one thing is, I'll disagree with the game seems too fast for him because he is absolutely by far their best defensive player. At one point, if you factor in the pace, which I think it was like about 40 minutes per game, right, and not in the NBA, in college basketball, he's a plus 21.5 in terms of his on-the-floor numbers. He is by far the best defensively. He forces turnovers and just man-up defense. I think he's the best guy that they have. Offensively, he still needs some work. He does the stupid power dribble when he goes up for the thing. You know, obviously that's easy. People strip him. You know, he does it all the time. Yeah. But he's actually
a 6'8" guy making himself 5'9".
Yeah, exactly. But he's actually shown offensively his game's improving a little bit.
Mid-range, I mean, around the shots, looking
mid-range, around the rim, he's finishing a lot better. He just needs to work on the fouls a little bit. But I think, I mean, he's got the potential to be their best player, and he's improved a little bit. So that's the one thing I'll throw out there that I disagree with.
Well, and one thing I will say about Dwayne Morgan, I don't want people to think that I'm down on Dwayne Morgan. I've written on the website that he is hands down our hardest working player. I mean, you see it in this kid's eyes. There's like a fervent intensity when he gets out there. And the thing is, he brings defense, as was mentioned. He brings rebounding. So, I mean, these are all things that you need. So I think a lot of it with Dwayne Morgan, he was brought in as a five-star talent out of Baltimore, and we just talked about it. People see five-star, and they equate that to NBA draft potential. So people are looking at it maybe from that perspective, but in the now, in the reality of the situation, Dwayne Morgan is invaluable to UNLV basketball.
Well, maybe that's the reason why people are frustrated, because they see the potential in him, and they want it. Plum turn it around right now.
No, that's perfectly possible. And the fact that, again, I mean, the one thing with him has been the foul trouble. I mean, the first 2 years, I think he was averaging over 6.5 fouls per game.
Oh, yeah, it's something ridiculous.
So it's something he needs to work on. And I think that's why it's frustrating, because it's the same little thing. But he has been staying on the floor. He's only fouled out once this year. So
I mean, it's a lot like Lamar Odom when he was with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And really anywhere that he went, there was, you know, I know he was a UNLV commit long, long ago.
that's a story for another day.
Yeah, but Lamar was so talented. He can do so much.
Yeah.
And then because he wasn't as dominant as some people thought he could or should be, but it's just not his game. You know, it's not his temperament. And people got frustrated. And then when they finally accepted him for who he is, which was an all-around player that could do it all, unselfish, almost like a point guard at his size, you know, he grew comfortable in his own role, then he became who he is and who he was as a player. It's the same thing with Morgan, I think. Yeah. You know, he's... You know, the fouls is probably, you know, defense is 90% of defense is effort. You know, and maybe he's trying a little too hard. He's been trying a little too hard, trying to compensate for people that aren't doing what they need to do. Instead of being 1 of 5, he's trying to be 4 of 5.
Well, trust me, he does have the stupid plays where he gets beat off the dribble and he'll reach in because he got beat. You know, there's things he does need to improve. But I just see he, by far, I think you could argue, if you factor in defense, he could be their best player.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just trying to, you know, see where the frustration is.
Especially with the demand, right? You always talk about supply and demand.
Yeah.
I mean, the demand for bodies on this team, especially in the front court, is necessary. So I think that also factors into, you know, people's disappointment. Because, I mean, Chris came back against Duke, Chris Jones. He doesn't look the same at all.
No, you could tell he was still hammered.
Exactly, which is another topic. I mean, I don't know why...
Why was he even playing?
Well, I can understand playing. You need some time. I don't know why he was playing so late. I mean, he's in there with, like, I think 13 minutes left. Duke's up by 30.
Yeah,
get him out. You don't need him in there.
Maybe to try to get him find rhythm. I mean, that's one thing I see when his jump shot. Like, it just looked like he just couldn't find a rhythm.
Which is weird because the first couple games, his jump shot, especially from the stripe, was like money.
Well, yeah, but he's been practicing and been involved. But when you're basically out five games or, you know, almost, 3 weeks or whatnot, you know, that game is game rhythm, game time. Tempo for you to get that rhythm and that it's completely different.
He also wasn't confident in the foot. Like there was a couple times where he posted up Grayson Allen or Luke Kennard, and he was like, "I'm not going to try to back him down. I'm just going to throw it back out."
The obvious mismatch was there, and he tossed it out of the post. That's very true.
But you know, we have some questions, and one of the questions coming from JD is he has a ton of questions this week. Okay. Red hombre, the hombre. So he says, we really haven't seen Coach Menzies deviate much from his standard rotation. Is there a reason why we don't see more Bush or Jordy and the other freshmen not being redshirted? Is it smart not giving these guys more minutes before conference play begins?
First off, it's Georgie, not Jordy. You get it right. Georgie's my man.
Hey, that's what I'm about to ask. What's up with my man's minutes? That's the unofficial Inside the Rebel podcast player of the year.
Look, from what I've heard, like in talking to Anderson and just hearing Menzies in the post games and everything, he kind of leans on the they're freshman deal. I made the Joe. I can't talk. It's too early. Joe gave the bewildered like what look like. Trust me, I'm with you. And he did this with Coupette a while too. Over the first couple games, where the first action Coupette saw, he was really solid. He was attacking the rim, getting deflections on defense, getting rebounds, and then like the next game he got 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's been kind of weird with the minutes and just allocating them, especially to younger guys. When he needs them, he puts them out there, but then other times it's like you can't even see them on the floor. And trust me, I don't really know exactly what his thinking is, other than that they're very young and they're raw. But I mean, you can look at a guy like Shaikna Dembele, he's pretty raw too, and he didn't play that well against Duke. And if you need a big, and Georgie can stroke it, he can shoot threes. So I'm just curious as to why you don't put them out there. Georgie does have holes in his offensive game, especially when it comes to attacking off the dribble. But I mean, I just don't know why you put him out there and see what you got.
I don't get it, because when you have what you have on the roster right now and where the expectations are, why not get as many guys minutes and create bench depth, not just for this year, but going forward as a team in the future? Like that's what I don't get. And I'm a big Menzies guy. I think he's going to do a fine job here, but I don't understand why you would keep someone, we use Georgie as the example, on the bench and not give him no tick when 2 years from now, let's say you're trying to have your bench depth and you have a guy that's going to be a junior, and you got a quality bench depth. Like, that's what you want. So you, if somebody, you know, let's say they get a three-star, let's say it's Chuck O'Bannon, hypothetically, right? And Chuck is there, and Chuck gets into foul trouble, or and they want to go big. They put George in. They feel comfortable doing it versus, like, I don't know if I want to put a
squeamish thought process.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and this team is so bereft of size, and you have a 6'11", you know, European player who can stroke it from distance. You know, he has a little bit of a post game. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of confounding as to why a guy like that would sit. You know, Menzies might be, you know, more comfortable relying on veterans like Uche Ifebu and, you know, Christian Jones. But as Joe said, I mean, it's a development factor. So, I mean, for me, I think a guy that needs to see at least 15, 20 minutes a game is that Ben Coupet. You know, he a little erratic offensively sometimes, but he's very much of that Dwayne Morgan mold. So he'll get out there, he's going to rebound, he's going to defend. You know, he's already played, you know, the 2 through the 5, so you know he's multifaceted. So, yeah, I mean, these are things I'd like to see a lot more moving forward.
Yeah, when it comes to Georgie, too, I would just throw out there that maybe he wants to redshirt him, and so that's why you don't see him out there.
Yeah, but I can see that, but you can – I mean,
just like we've already talked about, when you need bodies like that, I am surprised that you don't give him more run. But Menzies probably does have a plan. And the other thing is, we're not there in practice. I mean, Georgie could be stinking it up in practice, and we have no idea.
Yeah. But some guys, I mean, just generally speaking, some guys are better game players than practice players. Some guys just can't get up for practice, but they get into the game, the lights are on, everything just clicks and just goes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Now we'll shift gears a little bit to another question, which is the coaching staff is targeting more 4- and 5-star recruits than JD originally thought. He wants to know: does Menzies have a chance at landing any of them? And if so, could the 3-year rebuild, or is it going to be a 3-year rebuild, or is it going to be longer?
There's a definitive recruiting plan in place. I mean, you can see it starting to, you know, take shape. Of course, I mean, the recruiting chops are there. I mean, Troy Baxter was a consensus 4-star player on every single recruiting website out there. But again, I go back to what we were talking about earlier, and you look at, you know, these 2016, 2017 classes. Again, these premier upper echelon programs have been on these kids 4, 5, sometimes even 6 years. So for Menzies and, you know, Rob Jeter, Andre LaFleur, you know, these are really high-level recruiters, but still they're at a disadvantage. So where I see them making their biggest impact is maybe not, you know, this class, but the 2018, 2019 classes for sure. I mean, you look at a kid like a Zion Williamson out of South Carolina, 5-star. I mean, this kid's going to be a lottery pick. And all the talk out there is he likes Menzies and he likes UNLV. And you look at this kid, I mean, he's like a little, you can't say little about him. He's a grown-ass man, but he's very much Sir Charles-esque. You know?
What about the kid from Australia by way of Arizona? The point guard.
The Jay Green.
I like his game.
He's he's kind of an under the radar type, but, you know, 2-star. But again, you know, when you get these kids out of the Australian Institute of Sport, you know, maybe they don't have the same type of press coming into the United States. So by all reports on the website, you know, it's a little under the radar pickup. But again, we've heard that this guy could be a diamond in the rough. You know, he had like an 1800 SAT score, 6'5", really athletic, can play both guard spots, lefty. So, I mean, and Coach Dre is known for developing point guards. You know, Chris Dunn, Minnesota Timberwolves, Kemba Walker, Charlotte Hornets. I mean, that's his wheelhouse. So I imagine Menzies is going to pick up point guards and leave it up to Coach Dre. So with this Jay Green kid, I don't really have any worries because he's in good hands.
Yeah, and when it comes to the 5-star guys, I mean, obviously you're going to target them because they're talented people.
Right.
You know, they're talented players. Yeah. So it's never going to hurt when a 5-star, when you see him whittle down his top 5, it never hurts to see the UNLV logo there, because that for other kids who are out there who are looking for offers, I mean, you don't get that five star, but what if that four star is like, yeah, you know, UNLV, I've heard a lot of good things. He's got him in his top five. Let me take a look. And Menzies, you've heard a lot of good things about Menzies. And when he's interacted with the media, I mean, he's won me over. The limited interactions I've had with him. You know, he's just a really charismatic guy. And you've already had a couple kids comment on the fact that, you know, no, I'm going to take a look because of Coach Menzies. So he does a good job in recruiting. So you're going to see UNLV back again with these four-star, five-star kids because he has a knack for just being charismatic. And by the way, too, it's like it's a down year this year. UNLV is still somewhat of a brand. And the Mendenhall Center is an awesome facility that a lot of kids really like to go to. It's top-notch. And the Thomas & Mack, if it's ever filled, is actually a very good home court. So there's things that are working for him.
Well, I'll say this, and the thing is, you need to get four and five stars. We need to, UNLV needs to get four and five stars.
Agreed.
But they also need to get the guys that can come in and they will be the foundation and the heart of the basketball team.
Something that needs to be dispelled too with fans is just because they come in as like a two star, that doesn't mean that they're going to be a 4-year guy that's going to stick around and be a glue. Like they're still kids. They're still all different mentalities.
A good example is Jordan Clarkson. He was like a two star when he went to Missouri, and look at him now. He's, I mean, a second round pick, but he's busted through the NBA ceiling to where he's considered one of the ascending young guards in the NBA.
Yeah. Don't when you see fours, because people do when they see 4 or 5 stars. They think like, oh, he's going to the NBA. But it's also not the same thing opposite when you see a 2 or a 3 star. Like, he'll stick around forever. He's a glue guy. He's the guy that'll be there. And he'll part of the rotation.
But that's why I said, like, that's why I said you got to get those guys around those 4 and 5 star, you know, those name guys.
And a good coach can get a 4-star guy. Like, look at Malik Pope, for example, right?
Exactly.
Over at San Diego State.
Yes.
Yep.
Lottery pick. Has really performed well. A good coach can get him to stick around and be like, look, you're not really performing that well. You're not going to go that high. I can make you better. Stay around.
Yeah, Buddy Hield is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, he's a great example of that. And speaking of, let's shift gears. Now we're talking about recruits. The 14th, which is recording, so it's tomorrow, December 14th, is Junior College National Signing Day for the mid-season enrollees for football. And UNLV has done a very good job. This past weekend, they had a very fruitful official visit list of kids. Tony Sanchez, Kent Bear, Barney Cotton, and CJ Cox, the director of player development for UNLV football. They've done a great job on the recruiting trail.
Imagine when they get a 10th assistant.
Ooh.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that right now. Okay.
I was gonna say he snuck that one in.
We talked about on the last show. The rumor going around, and it's been reported now by the RJ, but we talked about it as well, is that Bishop Gorman head coach Kenny Sanchez will be joining UNLV staff in January after the coaches meet, which is the 12th. This is the last day of the coaches meeting. The dead period starts. It was over. Excuse me. The NCAA is going to vote, which I've been told is just a formality, that they're going to allow a 10th coach to come on a staff.
Is it January?
It's January.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was June. So I had the letter correct. I thought it was later in the...
No, it was January. January. So it looks like Kenny Sanchez is leaving Bishop Gorman and coming to UNLV as an assistant coach in a to-be-determined position.
I don't know. That's my X-Files music.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I'll say this. He's worked well with Tony. They've obviously had success. I think the pipeline from – I think it will help with the pipeline from Gorman to UNLV for those players because then he can officially talk with them and they have that relationship with Tony and Kenny. And I think it's going to be good because for me, another set of eyes for the coaching staff.
Well, it sounds like he'll be a defensive assistant too. Which can never hurt, especially with that.
Yeah, exactly. UNLV's defense.
Exactly. Well, and let's talk about that. Now – tomorrow, I'm not going to give away guys who have committed and told the staff that, and they're going to say their piece.
But there's a veritable laundry list, people. It's a great class.
There is. It's a good class. But I want to talk about, I'm going to start off with the guy that we wrote about, and it's actually a free article, Javier Edwards. He's a defensive tackle from Blinn Community College in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, and I'm speculating by saying this, I think he is they're at the top of their JC board, their JUCO board. I think he is the top player. He's 6'3", 338 defensive lineman, plays nose tackle, can play anywhere inside, you know, either the one or the three technique, yeah. He can play any technique up front on the D-line. He's a monster. We did an article on him. I actually think he is the top defensive tackle in this entire class of players across the country. And I've watched a lot.
That's a bold statement, but it might be right.
Well, dude, I mean, he's got a quick first step. He's powerful. He's agile. He plays the run and the pass one. He's got a motor, and he plays with that nasty that he instantly transforms that line into, like, oh, go ahead and try to run on us.
Like, well, which is a big issue, because we saw, especially in the back half of this year, that defensive line just get manhandled quite a few games. And there was no push whatsoever, especially on the interior.
Oh, that Reno game still gives me nightmares.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it frees the linebackers up to make plays. Mm-hmm. And he's that guy that they're going to have to double team. If they don't double team him, he's beaten any center or guard one-on-one.
Any of them.
Not a damn one can hold him. I'm telling you, this kid has me fired up. Like, seriously.
Look, he's going to commit just because of Joe.
Right now, you got the biggest fan right here in the building.
I would love to see him in Rebel Red.
Joe, I'll just cut this out and send him the MP3.
Hey, that's fine.
Any of them.
He will dominate him. I'm telling you. He is. Look it. Picture. I'll date myself. Jerome Brown, he played with Reggie White in Philadelphia, no defensive tackle. That type of impact player. But in a Vince Wilfork body, but a Linval Joseph motor. Like, this dude is what you
Joe's
want
like
in a D-lineman.
Joe's, like, clenching his fist right now.
You have no idea. Like, this dude is – he would be the dude. He would make this defense instantly better. And then – you got another kid that they're looking at that's UNLV's on the list, because from with Javier Edwards, he's got Florida, Arkansas, Colorado, and UNLV as the teams. That's
tell him about the cryptic tweet, Joe. Tell him about the cryptic tweet.
Ah, man, see, JVT's pulling all the stops.
Hey, trust me, because I do my prep, my friend.
I know. I'm glad you did. I retweeted it too.
No, I know.
He tweeted out last night, thinking about shocking the world.
World in all caps, people.
Shocking the world in caps.
Yep.
And that was a little bit after the article came out on Inside the Rebels.
And then some loser was like, yeah, shock the world. Go to Arkansas. Like, yeah, going to the SEC school is really going to be the shocker.
Yeah,
huh?
go to Arkansas and play for Bielema.
Yeah.
He'll talk about his wife all practice.
Garbage. Shock the world.
Yeah, shock the world. Come on, Javier. You're better than that. You want – look, I'll say this. Javier Edwards, if he were to come to UNLV, he would be – he's already probably being looked at as a late round pick in the NFL because of his size.
Right now, as in today.
The second. He comes to UNLV and he does what I think, and I think the coaches think that he could do. You're looking at a guy that can go in the top three rounds of the draft. Yeah. Like, easily in a year or two. Then they have this other cat named Anthony Luke. He's a defensive end / linebacker. And he's 6'1", 245, 250. Explosive first step off the edge. He's a edge rusher that plays the run real well, but he has that explosive first step coming off that edge. Can get slow, dips on a tackle, and just has a knack for getting to the quarterback. Great closing speed, and that's something with Edwards as well. I've seen on film where he's chased a running back 15 yards downfield and a quarterback and caught him from behind. Mm-hmm. So you're not talking about slow guys here. You're talking about impact guys on the line that will make Mike Hughes Jr. that much more of an impact player. You know, you have those. These are the type of guys you're looking at up front. Here's another kid that he'll be committing actually on Friday. He's making his commitment announcement on Friday. And then, obviously Jacob Rominger is already committed, the middle linebacker.
They're doing a good job, it looks like, of filling some of these key spots with JUCO guys that can step in and play right away.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's refreshing to have a staff that recruits need and not just filling bodies in for the sake of it. Hauk.
And it's quality need. And the thing is, too, with Rominger, you're looking at a guy that will do all the dirty work and has no problem doing it. But then he's the type of guy that with Javier Edwards in front of him, he's playing inside. That he's free to move and go make plays. Mm-hmm.
Tell us what kind of game Rominger has. Who would you compare him to?
You know, Rominger is just the old school linebacker. Very smart, very intelligent. No, because he's a former high school quarterback, so he kind of sees the game differently. So he has great instincts. he AJ Hawk in college. I think that would be a good kind of a good comparison.
When he was on the show, you compared him to Brian Urlacher.
I did not say Urlacher.
Yes, you did.
No, I did not.
I'll pull the audio. Play it for you next week. Play it for you next week.
Yeah, please do, because I did not
evidence?
Say Urlacher.
Is there empirical evidence here?
No, there's not.
There's evidence.
I did not say Urlacher.
You did.
No, I know.
You were like, I know Urlacher plays safety, but
no, that's a lie.
The linebacker.
You know, I know that's a lie because I'm not a Bears fan and I never was an Urlacher guy. So I'm just going to be honest.
I was going to say, do we have a cheesehead talking about a Bear? Yeah, I don't know about all that.
That's not happening.
I'll pull it.
So pull it.
I think he has it in his beanie up there, his Parappa the Rapper beanie.
I always thought this looked like me. Who's the crackhead character from Dave Chappelle?
Oh, Tyrone Biggums.
Yeah, Tyrone Biggums. Yep. I feel like.
Hi, I'm JVT.
And then I would hang out with all my friends.
I got the Rebel fever.
I always liked behind the ear.
Oh, yeah. But Rominger's game, though, is a lot like AJ Hawk, where he's just an old school linebacker and he's a thumper. He can cover as well. And then you go to the back, and I know that's something that I'm going to talk about one corner in particular, and that is my guy, Willie Hobdy. Mm. Willie Hobdy, he's playing JUCO ball. Ronnie Kelly, Kansas. He's from Texas, the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Willie is the type of guy that is a lockdown corner. Locked in, it's 6'2". Almost 6'3", almost 200 pounds, great ball skills. His brother is Joe West. He plays in the CFL, an impact player up there for the Calgary Stampeders. My brother actually played against him, and he gave him fits. Willie, he's got that temperament, again, that you want in a DB. Like that, throw it my way, I'm going to go up and get it, we're going to hurt somebody. And if they get the ball, we're going to hurt somebody. I'm taking it to the house. You have those three guys that aren't committed yet with the commitment of Rominger. And then you have the commitment yesterday of Sid Acosta, a center from Riverside Community College. By way of Corona Centennial. This guy, from my understanding, is looking as a guy that can come in and think he can start from day one. Mm. Big-time center prospect right there.
Which, if he can play to the level anywhere near Kreitler, I mean, the offensive line's not going to miss a step because that's the only guy that they're missing from this year.
Exactly. I think he adds a different element. Kreitler was so smart and so technically. He's technically sound, he's smart, but he's got nasty in him. Like a big-time nasty in him.
Kreitler was, every time he did come up to the press conference, he seemed very gentle giantish.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we played pretty well.
Yeah, Sid is a soft-spoken kid. I've known Sid for a while. He actually played at Corona Centennial, where I'm from. So I've seen him in high school. Yep. He's a dude. He is a dude. Like,
by the way, speaking of Kreitler, I believe is it Pro Football Focus had him in their group of five, best center?
Yeah, he is.
Wow.
A lot of NFL people and CFL people really like him. The knock on him was the same thing was the knock on Olin Cruz when he came out of Hawaii, which is his size.
Yeah, he was a little on the smaller side.
But Kreitler can play. A lot of people I spoke to, NFL scouts, love Kreitler. And then over the weekend, too, not to lose focus, Noah Bean, the tight end from Grace Brethren High School in Simi Valley, California, committed. Big time commitment right there. This is a guy, he's 6'4". He'll probably end up being about 6'5", maybe 6'6". By the time he leaves UNLV, he'll probably end up getting about 250-ish, I'll say, but at 240, 250, by the time he's 220 right now. This kid can play.
But you got to use him.
No, trust me. I fully believe that's going to happen. This kid's special.
Yeah, I saw on the Twitter that Mr. Armani Rogers was very excited.
Yes.
So
Armani's like, my guy. Mm-hmm. My guy. And then keep this in mind, too. Here's a little Inside the Rebel exclusive.
Dun, 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 dun.
That we touched on. Tyree Collinsworth, the running back from Sacramento. Very good. He's a commitment, 100% committed. He was up here on his official visit over the weekend, along with a local guy, Markel Grayson from Desert Pines, the quarterback. Collinsworth called all the recruits that weren't meeting with coaches at that time down to his hotel room. Him and Grayson gave, like, a pretty much passionate speech about committing to UNLV.
Did he give us the, this is our Independence Day?
No, okay. No. He wasn't all like that.
Yeah.
But he told me essentially when he got me wanting to play for him. This kid, Hollinsworth, is a talker, and he's a guy that gets you to believe in what he's saying. And he was like, look, man. We have a goal in mind, and one of the recruits actually that committed recently, put it out there on his Twitter, and I forget who it was. I wish I could remember. But he was like, we have goals in mind, you know, going to a bowl, winning the Mountain West, and winning a national championship. Hollinsworth did not sway from that. He's like, my goal is by the time I leave here in 4 years playing in that new stadium that we're going to be playing for a national title. And I think we can do it with the group that we have, with our guys right now that's coming in this freshman class, with last year's guys and Armani leading the way on the offensive side of the ball. We're going to win. We're going to win big. This is something special. And I've gotten that from every recruit that I've gotten. In fact, the recruit was Devin Lloyd, the safety. Okay. Devin tweeted that out, that this is one of the
– big body safety, too.
Yeah, you know, I take that back. It's going in the interview for Devin that's going up today. In the interview, I asked him about that, and he put it in the interview that this is the goal. So big – and he's looking to come up here. And the thing is, he's raw, but he's got game.
His measurements, just when I look at the measurements, I haven't watched any on him, but his measurements intrigue me as a safety. He's 6'4", what, 210, 205?
6'4", 215, I want to say it was.
No, it was 210, but he had eight picks. And the thing is, he played safety – last year with no formal training. Like, it was just like, this is cover two and this is cover four. Go get the ball. And he's a converted receiver. But this kid is like, no one's going to outwork me. So I'll say this. Tomorrow, December 14th, is the big day for early enrollees for JUCO. Inside the Rebels, we'll have exclusives with everybody. Also, look out for in the upcoming weeks, all the commitments are writing personal letters to the Rebels fan base. And that will be on Inside the Rebels as far as why they committed to UNLV. And I tell you what, look, I'm going to say by the end of the week, I think there will be at least four, and that includes Jacob Rominger, JUCO commits that could come in next year and start. That includes Rominger and Akasa. No, I'll say five because I didn't include Akasa. Five that could come in and start. Four on the defensive side of the ball. How's that?
There you go. I like
Impact
it.
Recruiting.
Impact recruiting by Tony and the staff doing a great job, by the way. So, guys, that is it this week for Inside the Rebels.
One thing before we get out of here. I want to implore everybody, get your asses to the Thomas and Mac. Get in those seats. If one thing that's going to hold truer than anything is that we need to support this team even during the rough times. I don't want to see any more 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people at the T&M. Come out and support the Running Rebels.
I'm gonna let
you opening a can of worms. I'm out.
Yeah, JVT ain't gonna touch that right now. But guys, we're gonna get out of here. That's Jeff Waterlove, our basketball writer. Thank you for joining us, JVT.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I'm Joe Arrigo. If you want to find Jeff, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm at Jeff Waterlove.
JVT
at me JVT
and me at Joe Arrigo or at Inside the Rebels. Have a great
rest of your week.
There you go.
Woo woo.